Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. I'm in Moab for this broadcast, very special broadcast of Access Utah. We want to shine a spotlight on the Moab Music Festival. It's ongoing here in Moab, and you can find out all about it at moabmusicfest.org, moabmusicfest.org. We're kind of centering in on a particular, a very special performance, but there's so many performances going on and so many venues. It's I think their 32nd year, I believe, read here. So just wonderful. One of these performances is described this way. The Colorado River flowing through Moab sets the scene for world premieres about water commissioned by the Moab Music Festival Commissioning Club. From up-and-coming composers with Utah ties to in Colorado Currents. This concert taking place on Saturday, tomorrow. And there are new works by Maya Miro Johnson and Royden C. This piece by Utah composer John Costa, Diné composer Connor Chi, and performances by members of the Hopi Nation. And so we want to talk about this, about talk about the river, about composing music and Hopi traditions and the whole gamut here. So we do bring in Maya Miro Johnson, composer. I'll get you the microphone here. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, thank you so much. It's great to be here.
We have sitting right next to you is Royden C., another composer.
Hello, everyone. It's nice thank to be you. Here, too.
And we have with us Connor Chi as well, another composer.
Yes, good morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then sitting on my side of the table, we're in the conference room here at the USU Moab campus. By the way, I want to mention a big shout out thanks to them, the USU Moab campus. The good folks at the Moab Music Festival as well, and Red Rock Bakery in Moab for providing pastries and coffee. So sitting immediately next to me is Howard Dennis. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Thanks for being here.
And we have with us John Weisheit as well.
Good to be here, Tom. Thanks for inviting us all.
So let's go around the panel. Have you introduced yourself a little bit? Let's start with Maya Miro Johnson. Tell me a bit about yourself.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm an interdisciplinary composer performer. I grew up in Salt Lake City. I did a 5-year degree at the Curtis Institute of Music in Philadelphia, and I'm starting my master's at Yale next week.
All right. Those are big names. Thank you. That's great. That's congratulations.
Thanks.
That's wonderful. And you've we'll get into talking about this a little bit later. You've composed a piece special for the Moab Music Festival.
Yes. Yeah. Royden and I received these commissions based on a call for proposals that they put out about a year ago or so. And they were interested in creating new works from composers with some type of connection to the state of Utah. That would specifically be featured in this concert about the Colorado River. And that was our task that we were given once we won this competition.
Yeah. Understand just one more thing on your bio here. You formed the performance art duo Pronounce 2. Is that the name of it?
Yes.
Okay. It's in brackets, so that's the name of it.
Pronounce yes, 2. Yes.
Tell me about this.
Yes. So close friend in early undergraduate, we started doing these performance artworks, both reinterpreting kind of, if you would call it, the canon of that kind of early era of performance art, as well as doing our own pieces. We started, obviously, at Curtis together, and then we continued doing this virtually during the pandemic and produced lots of kind of amateur video pieces. Yeah, so that's the quick answer for that question.
Yeah, yeah, that sounds fun. Meet Royden C. Next. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, my name is Royden C. I'm a composer. I teach composition and piano as well. I am Canadian, so my Utah tie was actually my wife. I married her in Canada, but she lives and was from Salt Lake City. And so I've had the opportunity to visit Salt Lake City and the state a couple of times because of that. Yeah, what else would you like to know?
I see from your bio, your some of your inspirations, your themes, challenges placed by posed by climate change, and the complexities of grief. Those are,
yeah, I would say grief came first, and then okay, climate change yeah, later. Yeah, but yeah. I think for me, at least, I'm born in Hong Kong, and I came came to North America as a teenager. And it wasn't until being in North America that I was became more interested in my roots and cultural roots. And that became a driving force, I think, in my music, of trying to understand the different identities that I had as a person, as a musician, and trying to put that together in my music. And then climate change, more of a recent thing, when I had conversations with composers and people I knew who were also kind of thinking about the same things. And I decided to kind of dig deeper into this kind of issue and see what music can say or do in this kind of realm as well.
Yeah. We'll get into talking about your composition a little bit later. Let's turn to Connor Chi. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm Connor Chi. I am from the Navajo Nation. I'm based in Phoenix, but I'm originally from Northern Arizona, Page. So right on the Utah border, that's sort of my connection, and the Lake Powell area. I'm a pianist and a composer. I spent most of my time in my early years of my education focused just on piano performance. But after I finished my master's degree, I also sort of started doing composition, which has become a big part of my career now. So the pieces I compose are sort of a combination of my classical training and my Diné Navajo heritage.
I want to follow up. So composition came a little bit later for you.
Yeah, I studied composition. You know, I was very interested in it as a child, and all of my electives were always in composition, but I was studying piano performance for my degrees. But it was sort of afterwards that I started writing music just for myself to play, and as other people were more interested, it sort of branched out into this whole other direction for me musically.
Let me just follow up right now with all of our composers, starting with you, Connor. What do you draw on for your composition? Do you go back to your native roots? I guess all of your training comes into it, right?
Yeah, honestly, it started as somewhat of a preservation project. I wanted to find a way to preserve some of the traditional chants that my grandpa would sing. A lot of it gets lost because it's an oral tradition. And so, you know, rather than just recording it or writing it down, my way of sort of giving voice to that was to take my piano training and sort of combine it. So I started out just basically doing some settings of some traditional corn grinding songs, and then doing some compositions that were just based on the meter or the form of these traditional chants. And after that, it sort of branched out into being inspired by elements of the culture, not necessarily the music itself, but also the art and the life philosophies.
Yeah. So Royden C, I understand you compose in a chamber, tell me about your influences, I guess.
Yeah, I love writing for orchestral work, like orchestral music, operatic music, vocal music, kind of any formation that keeps composing fresh for me. My influences, I think, are, I try to start from an emotional standpoint when I compose something that, like writing music that speaks to me first and then hopefully can speak to others. And then I suppose like inspiration comes from my environment, people around me, events happening, you know, today, you know, on the world stage as well. So it's really hard to say, because I think there's a lot of influences, a lot of things that can inspire me. I think deadlines can inspire me a lot too, because when you have a deadline, it really pushes you to get going and finish the piece. So yeah, I would say that's a big influence too.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Might you respond to that? I guess the deadline is a big inspiration for you as well.
You might hear me chuckling over here. Yeah, certainly. I would call it more of a pressure than inspiration. But
yeah.
Yeah, so my work really sits right now in the exploration of the politics of the body. You may hear the phrase, the body keeps the score, but I also think it tells a story. And so kind of my influences right now include media, cyborgization, synthesis, and kind of exposing the storytelling that the body does. And this comes from my perspective dealing with some bodily trauma and disability. And so a lot of my work also focuses on combining technology and the human body in synthetic ways rather than additive ways. And so the way that, you know, comes through in this piece is that I'm discovering the concept of the river as a body that has had all of these events happen to it, and the remnants of those events tell us its story as a body. And so that's kind of how I, as someone who is himself admittedly a city person, and I was thinking, well, what can I have to say about this incredible thing that I don't really have, you know, more than a superficial connection to? And so I was trying to connect it to the work that I do have a strong connection to, and like the overall through lines in my work that way. And so, yeah, it is kind of like a portrait, a self-portrait of the river, if the river could write something about itself.
Okay. One more follow-up, then we'll get to the guests on my side of the table here. You wrote an opera.
Yes, I think we have all written something operatic. Yeah,
that seems big.
Yeah, I think opera as a term is very is quite variable today. So I wouldn't, you know, what you might be imagining is a large Wagnerian stage with a huge orchestra and sets and all that kind of stuff. Like, opera is much more multimodal today. And that word is kind of, I don't know, it might be even transitioning out of usage in that it's kind of like a music theater or a multimedia music with text and voice. But yes, I'm working on a large scale multimedia project with an opera singer. So yeah. I guess you could call that an opera.
Okay. Yeah, I was imagining, you know, kind of a, maybe not Wagner, but Verdi or something.
Well, if you want to call up the Met and see, you know, if they're interested, sure. But
see if they'll take your opera. That's great. Yeah. Well, let me turn to Howard Dennis. Tell me just a little bit about yourself. Yes.
I'm a Hopi from the village of Musongnabe, located in northeastern Arizona. I have many titles, but foremost, I'm a village flute chief in my village. I had various titles. I'm a Kalan leader, as well as an environmental educator. I think the main focus of our performances today will be related to water, as we're water-based culture. And hopefully by our performances, we will relate the importance of water throughout, you know, the various rivers, the rain, and other sources of water. That's pretty much about who I am.
Before we get to water, definitely be a through line through all these compositions and what we'll talk about today on the program. You're a flute chief. What is a flute chief?
It involves one of our main ceremonies that is performed within our village. It's a performance to bring rain to our crops and all the areas throughout the world, you know, so they will have water too, because it is so important. And for the Hopi, we really rely on it, because we live in a desert where we have no water surface, water there. And so we rely on the rain and snow and all of those other sources of water, hail, et cetera, to bring rain and to nourish our crops so that we can remain, you know, living within our region. And so that's why it's really important to us that we continue to practice our religion, our culture.
All right, thank you. Let's turn to John Weisheit. Tell me a little bit about yourself.
Thank you, Tom. My name is John Weisheit. I'm a professional river guide and a river conservation activist. And I've been involved with the Moab Music Festival for over 30 years. Mostly providing transportation for some of the events, whether it be the jet boat drive to the Grotto concert or the four-day Cataract Canyon river trip, which usually brings along a handful of musicians. And I'm also 70 years old, which means I've been doing this a long time. In my younger days, it was not uncommon for me to be on the river for 280 days a year. And I would usually do that not only with paying customers, but with science professors. And so I've learned a lot about the different approaches to the river and to water. But what I find the connection with music is the word movement, because that's what water is. Water is in constant movement, whether it's a vapor or a glacier or at groundwater, and that's what music is. It's in constant movement. So there's a huge connection in that perspective.
You mentioned providing transportation that highlights the incredible venues at the Moab Music Festival. You're on the river, you're next to the river, you're just the incredible scenery. Maybe talk about some of the more unusual places that you transport people to hear music.
Yes, and so we are in the grips of climate movements like wind, and the rapids can be noisy, and so we have to be creative in our outdoor adventures with musicians and stuff. I think the highlight of the Cataract Canyon River trip is the when people begin to go to sleep and the musicians are still at it. And they usually, instead of playing prepared pieces, they play what they want. And that's the best reason to be on the Cataract Canyon trip.
Wonderful. I just want to follow up with you once again, John Weisheit. I was reading an interview you gave a couple years ago. And you said we live in a very distracted society, right? We have serious problems. We need to concentrate on those. I wonder where something like the Moab Music Festival and you know, world premieres and the music and panel discussions, how that can help. I guess music is more concentration, right? Maybe the opposite of distraction.
Well, yeah, I think it's our approaches to water, and those approaches can be political, they can be engineered, they can be the naturalist approach or the spiritual approach. And so there's all these, you know, some might call them distractions, but if all of these elements come together to discuss, to make a movement, a peace, if you will, we would begin to understand and how water works and how it applies in our daily life and how we could avoid these distractions and move forward unitedly to heal the Colorado River and to make it soothing as a concert would be at any of the Moab Music Festival events.
You're listening to Access Utah special edition of the program on this Friday. And I'm broadcasting to you from the USU Moab campus. We're in Moab today, and we're talking with some great folks who are involved with the Moab Music Festival. You can find them at moabmusicfest.org. It's ongoing through September 14th, and we're especially highlighting a special concert to take place tomorrow evening, Saturday evening. It will feature some world premieres of commissioned works, and I'm looking at the composers right now. We'll talk more with them, they are Maya Miro Johnson, Royden C., and Connor Chi. We're also talking with John Weisheit, who's co-founder of Living Rivers, he's Colorado Riverkeeper, and Howard Dennis is a religious leader, a flute chief, and clan leader from the Hopi Village. He'll be performing for several events as well. We'll have more following this break. Thanks for listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and this is a special edition of the program. We are celebrating the Moab Music Festival. It's ongoing through September 14th. So many venues. We heard from John Weisheit about that, throwing people down the river to the beaches and caverns, to concert halls here in Moab. It's a wonderful event, and it's ongoing through September 14th. Find out more about it at moabmusicfest.org. We have with us some composers who have been commissioned by the Moab Music Festival to write pieces specifically for the festival, and we'll have those world premieres tomorrow evening, Saturday evening, as a part of the Moab Music Festival. Those composers are Maya Miro Johnson, Royden C., and Connor Chi. We also have with us John Weisheit, co-founder at Living Rivers, and Howard Dennis, who's a religious leader, flute chief, and a clan leader with the Hopi people, right? Yes. So I want to hear about, if we were on the ball, we would have. Of course, these are world premieres, so there are no recordings of your pieces, but I guess we would have taken recordings of the rehearsals or something. But you'll have to come to the concert on tomorrow night. Let's start with Maya again. Tell me a bit about how you received this commission, and then it's supposed to be about the river, right?
Yeah.
So how do you go about this?
Royden and I were discussing this yesterday. It's a very specific prompt, but it was also a very vague prompt at the same time. It was just write a piece that has something to do with the Colorado River. And I mean, we had submitted proposals, I think, but the idea was that they, you know, We're interested in our work from those proposals, but we could take our time to kind of really parse through the concepts and choose different ones. I was very lucky that they had me out here on a research trip where I met John, and he taught me a lot about the river and the space. And it was amazing to see it firsthand because I hadn't been down here since I was 4 or 5 and couldn't really remember much anyway. So it was a great experience, and I had so much information to work with. For me, the process did take a lot of time of just parsing out all of that information I'd experienced and been given. And I did a lot of restarting. I did a lot of, you know, throwing things out and starting over, and had a little bit of writer's block because I think I was just so overwhelmed by the amount of options that there were. And then, you know, as Royden said, the deadline inspires. So I started to focus more on one concept and set everything else aside and just went with that and wrote till the end. Yeah.
What's this scored for? Is it the chamber piece?
Yes. So I asked for 7 string instruments, 2 violins, 2 violas, 2 cellos, and a double bass. And they also have some small auxiliary percussion instruments in the form of these Newton's cradles that I bought. And part of that is because it creates a more heterogeneous sound, because the strings, and specifically I asked for the strings because they are so homogeneous, but having this like rock clanking sound that also is an expression of time, because it's these varying pulses, it really helped to kind of create something different about the piece. And those, you know, moments occur in very specific structural points in the piece too, when the overall texture and timbre completely changes into this one, the kind of like of competing metronomes. And I also, on a visual aesthetic level, enjoyed the fact that the Newton's cradles create this arc or this curve that kind of almost looks like the valley itself that the performance will be taking place in. And there's also a very special moment in the middle of the piece where the performers break away from their notated music, from their, you know, classical concert venue, and they actually look around the kind of bowl that they're in, this of this large canyon or valley, I guess, and they kind of trace with their instruments the tops of the ridges of the space that they're in. So it's trying to create a little bit more sense of site specificity, so that it's not just you know, separable concert work, but it kind of is more integrated with the place in which it's being performed. I can also tell you just a little bit more about the piece for descriptive purposes. It's in these 7 scenes, starting with 70 million years ago. And each scene is a new kind of rupture event in the life of the planet, specifically this part of the planet. So tectonic plates colliding, volcanic eruptions, floods, et cetera, et cetera. And each scene, you know, is united by a couple musical ideas, but it moves through the history of the river up until the Anthropocene, when this music comes in that's very, very different from everything else. And then I actually generated using an algorithm in a software called Max that was using live data from the river, like salinity, temperature, time of day, things like that from the USGS, and then used those as variables to output music, basically, which I then kind of arranged for the chamber ensemble. And that just kind of goes until it completely stops dead, because that's the present day of the piece.
Yeah, it's a very modern. Mozart didn't have access to an algorithm, right?
If he was as bright as they say he was, he may have been
maybe in his mind, right? Yeah. In his mind. Speaking of Mozart, I wanted to, have you been involved in rehearsals?
Yes.
So that's interesting, you know, to a lot of times you're playing music of dead composers, you don't have input from the composer. Mm-hmm. What's that process like?
Yeah, I mean, I love being involved in the rehearsal process. I'm also a violinist and conductor, and I play a lot of different electronic instruments like theremin and synthesizer and things like that. So I'm used to being on the stage and like part of the piece. And it's a really great process. It's kind of like shaping clay a little bit, because it's so live, you know, they're so agile too, because they're such amazing players. So I can be making pretty significant changes like on the spot with them. And it's a really great process that feels very collaborative, which I really enjoy.
Yeah. You don't throw your weight around and scream at them. Okay, that's good.
No, this is not 70 years ago.
That's right. Yeah. You hear stories of some conductors, you know.
Yeah.
I won't name names. But before we go to our other composers, I want to turn back to John Weisheit. You said you went on a trip with him in preparation. John, I don't know if you remember specifically what you told Maya, but I'm interested what you tell people. People come to you, you know, you're a river keeper, but on the river, care about the river. What do you tell people?
Well, it was an enjoyable day, and we had a group of people with us, including Michael Barrett, the director of the Moab Music Festival, and there were other river guides on that trip, but I mostly remember telling Maya that there are three things that I think are what need to be covered. And I'm not saying she has to, or but I basically, there's this 2-page philosophical paper written by Luna Leopold, and he said the three things that we must consider in our daily lives is geography, climate, and culture. And if you're doing something without those three pillars, you don't have three legs to stand on, and your project will fail. And it's just not only music composing, it's breaking leaves in your yard. So that's what I tried to pass on to her.
Howard Dennis, I wonder, you're performing, I think, in at least three of the concerts here, and you do perform. What do you try to accomplish as you're performing? What do you want the audience to take from that?
Well, I guess the main focus is that the importance of water, what we're trying to relate. And as we perform these at these different events, it is mostly trying to get the children involved. And as an educator, I think, you know, that's one of the main things that I try to focus on is concentrating on the children and teaching them as well. And not just the Hopi children that are out there, but all other children, you know, throughout these events that we'll be attending, as well as the older people there. But our instruments that we're going to be using are nothing like the composers here. Ours are very simple, you know, the drum, the rattle, and our voices. And through that, we're trying to relate to the public, you know, the importance of the harmony within nature, as John said, you know, with all three of these things involved with culture as well. And that's one of the main things that we're going to try to relate to, express our concerns with many of the issues that are involved here.
All right, thank you. Well, let's continue with our composers. Let's turn to Royden C. Next. Tell me about composing your world premiere composition.
Yeah, it was, well, first of all, it was a great honor to receive a commission from the Moab Music Festival and to be entrusted with a project that deals with such a special river to so many people. Like Maya, we had a chat with John early on. I think I remember it was late September 2023. We're on a Zoom call, and it was wonderful to hear John and really to get to know John, because in almost for all, every time I research the Colorado River, John's name pops up, and then inevitably I read something about John or something that John said, and so to hear him say and speak about the river was very inspiring. After our chat, I did a lot more research, and I felt kind of almost intimidated by the topic, simply because it's such a vague and vast topic, the river, and you could approach it from so many angles, from the perspective of history, geography, and science, etc. And so for me, kind of like Maya, I had to narrow down and eliminate things that I wasn't going to use. And I also went through a lot of drafts to try and kind of narrow down what is my musical material, because at the end of the day, after all the research and intellectualization of the river, it's about the music, and in a way, two separate things for me. So I had to find a way for the music to come out and express that and put it on paper, basically. And it was actually not until April I went on a trip to Japan and Korea for a completely different reason. I was researching traditional East Asian music for Grant, that I more or less had a breakthrough musically, because I knew I wanted the music to express something about the river, but I didn't know what it was. And I realized during that trip that it was about time, about how timeless this river has been, and how can I use, what kind of music can I write to express that sense of timelessness? And going to Japan and Korea led me to experience some forms of music there that were timeless, that had a longer history than Western classical music. And so from there, I came back to the drawing board to kind of rethink the whole idea of my piece, which is now called Living Waters, and it's scored for violin, cello, percussion, and bass clarinet.
Yeah, interesting. Tell me again, the scored for?
Oh yeah, it's violin, cello, bass clarinet, and percussion.
And percussion, yeah. Well, people have to come tomorrow night to hear that. Yeah, world premiere. Let's turn to Connor Chi. Same question. Tell me about this process of composing.
Well, originally my involvement was just going to be as a performer, playing some of my own compositions, and they'd asked me if I had any works that were based on water or the Colorado, and I did have works based on water and different themes surrounding that, but nothing specific to this river. And so it was later on that they asked me if I'd be interested and, you know, if they would commission me to write a new piece. And I was very excited. So I'm very honored to have that opportunity. It's a piece that is for solo piano, which I find to be easy in the sense that it's my instrument that I've studied, but it can also be very challenging because there's sort of a limit placed on what I can do with just this one instrument, which sort of forces my creativity in a way. So for this piece, I really wanted to think about our traditional Diné views of the river. And so what I ended up doing was creating these themes for the Colorado River and also where it intersects with the San Juan River. There's the Colorado being the female river and the San Juan being the male river. And they converge sort of near where I grew up, Glen Canyon, the Lake Powell area near Rainbow Bridge, which is also a sacred place. And so creating these themes and sort of how they work together in this convergence. And I also was inspired by our tradition of offering corn pollen when we cross water. It's a sacred thing. And so we always make an offering and we sprinkle the corn pollen with our index and finger and our thumb. And so there's these moments throughout the composition where we're crossing these waters and making this offering. And my way of representing that was doing these repeated notes with the index finger and the thumb that are underlying and surrounded by these harmonies and the melodies of the river as my way of sort of making a blessing and an offering towards these waters.
Yeah, wonderful. Tell me, what's this scored for? What are the instruments?
It's just for solo piano.
Solo piano, yeah. That's your instrument.
It is, yeah. That's why I spent, you know, a lot of time studying the piano and, you know, branching off into composition. I've written for a lot of different instruments, but I definitely feel at home when I'm in my composing mode and setting up the instrument.
Yeah. So a lot of times the most interesting things happen during the break. People don't hear it. So during our last break, Maya asked you how you got into piano. What did you say?
Yes, actually. So I grew up in, you know, middle of nowhere, Arizona, Page, which is, you know, it was even smaller than it is today. But I started playing because my dad got a gift. It was just a tiny little toy electronic keyboard, and neither of my parents were musical, but I was really fascinated with this instrument and started teaching myself by ear. And when my parents saw that I was interested in it, they eventually got me lessons and eventually got me a real piano, which was a challenge. I mean, they were having to drive me 2 hours to Flagstaff every weekend and 2 hours back just for a piano lesson because the music education where I grew up was pretty much non-existent. So I was very fortunate that my parents made those sacrifices for me. But it was sort of a out of nowhere thing that I started on the piano.
Yeah. And here you are.
Yes.
That's great. Yeah. Well, let's take another break. We'll come back and talk more. We're talking about the Moab Music Festival. You can find them at moabmusicfest.org. So many venues, so many performances. Go to the website, get the tickets there, moabmusicfest.org. I'm broadcasting from Moab, from the USU Moab Center. Thanks to them. Our thanks to Red Rock Bakery for providing pastries and coffee here. And we are talking with composers Maya Miro Johnson, Royden C., and Connor Chi. They have world premieres. So it'll be happening at a concert tomorrow night at the Moab Music Festival. We are also talking with John Weisheit, co-founder at Living Rivers, and Howard Dennis, who's a religious leader, a flute chief, and a clan leader with the Hopi village. We'll have more following this break. You're listening to Access Utah, a special edition of Access Utah on this Friday. And I'm Tom Williams. I'm broadcasting from Moab today. We're at the USU Moab Center. Thanks to the good people there. Thanks to Red Rock Bakery in Moab, providing pastries and coffee. Appreciate them. And thanks to good folks at the Moab Music Festival. You can find them at moabmusicfest.org. We're talking to three composers who have world premieres at a concert tomorrow evening. We're also talking with John Weisheit, co-founder at Living Rivers, and Howard Dennis, who's a religious leader in the Hopi community, flute chief, clan leader. Want to hear a little bit about some of the venues here. I've been talking about this, but first of all, tell us your name, and then tell us about a couple of these venues.
Hi, this is Karen Fury, and I work with the Moab Music Festival in the office, and I'm in the box office a lot of times, but we'll be out at the venues. The Red Cliffs Lodge is a wonderful venue. You can have seating out on a grassy area with views of the river and listen to magnificent music being conducted by all these people that are here. I highly recommend it. It's unlimited as far as tickets. Bring a chair, sit back, relax, and enjoy the music.
All right. It's one of the wonderful many venues. Thank you so much for telling us about that. I want to turn next again to Howard Dennis. You, in addition to performing, you've done some very effective, call it advocacy work, activism. I'm going to turn to your bio here again. I'm going to pull this up to get this correct. Let's see. So you work with Native Waters Rising, right? Understand. Also, you're board member for the Black Mesa Trust and advisor to the Waterkeeper Alliance. Tell me about some of that work.
Well, those mostly involve environmental work concerning coal issues, water issues, uranium, fracking, various venues that all different types of government agencies, as well as private agencies or private companies, they trying to pursue. And then as an environmentalist, you know, we try to work to enforce various environmental protection agency policies, and as well as teaching and educating our people throughout, you know, the various areas that we travel. So as working with Black Mesa Trust, we were involved with the closure of various power plants throughout the Four Corners region, which those power plants were contributing to a number of pollutants that were being emitted from them. So with the closure of them, we're hoping, you know, that we're helping the climate, you know, to become better. And with Waterkeepers Alliance, you know, that I've been to many of their conferences, and I'm glad to be a part of that organization, to where we have waterkeepers throughout the world who concentrate on keeping rivers, you know, healthy and having a clean, fishable, swimmable water throughout the world. And with Native Waters Rising, that's a new group that we have started, you know, to help, I guess, more rural areas like our community, to where we can bring funding in to educate the youth as well as the elderly into different various issues of concerning water, and as well as political issues out there that we have to deal with. And through educating the public, you know, it makes the heart feel good, because I know that I'm out there doing something good throughout the world for everyone.
Oh, excellent. Thank you for sharing that. John Weisheit, I wondered a couple of questions. First, we talked about some of Connor's earliest memories with music. You've lived your life on the river, advocated for it. Can you recall earliest memory with regard to the river, running it, whatever?
Yes. When my parents got married in 1953, they honeymooned on the Colorado River below Parker Dam. One of my first memories is on the Chemehuevi Indian Reservation on Lake Havasu, learning how to water ski. I think it was destined for me to be a river guide, because actually we started, Connor, I spent a lot of time on Lake Powell and Rainbow Bridge. That's where I learned my first lessons about water management. My first houseboat trip was in 1972, and the reservoir was quite low, like it is right now. The reservoir in 1973 raised 90 feet, and that's when I saw a lot of the cultural heritage buried by water. Cottonwood trees, habitat for beavers and other. That's when I began to realize that maybe we need to rethink the way we have engineered the Colorado River.
Second question. I reading again some interviews you gave, a lot of problems, of course, with the river, and you're concerned very much about these and, you know, trying to advocate for the river. You said in that one of these interviews, you have to have hope. Do you maintain hope? And what do you tell people how to maintain hope?
Well, I have to have hope. It's a daunting task because we've been managing this river for over 120 years. So it will likely take 120 years to turn it into a resilient, sustainable river. I will not be alive in 120 years, but I am at the critical juncture to make the change that we must make. So I feel privileged. I do want to say that we need to listen to the traditional tribes of the Colorado River. There are 30 of them. They all have 30 opinions, and we need to hear those 30 opinions because they've been here. And it worked resiliently and sustainably for them. So we can learn much from the tribes, and that's a good first step.
Just to come down to the last 5 minutes or so, I want to just go around with our composers again. I guess you've composed now these world premieres. What, I'll start with you, Maya. What would always, I guess you're going to wonder how your composition's received, right?
Yeah.
And I guess maybe, I don't know, it depends on the venue, depends on the, you know, there's a lot of factors that go into that. Maybe talk about that, the live performance of a piece, and especially this is a world premiere. What are you hoping?
I see. So I obviously care a great deal about the experience of the audience. I don't claim to be able to dictate it or predetermine it. I think, you know, the way I feel about it is that I'm posing a question of some sort, and it's their responsibility to answer it, not answer it, but engage with it, think about it. And so I'm not trying to suggest an answer, really. I think with what I do, I'm kind of raising questions and making people think a little bit differently about something. And, you know, I think the worst possible reaction would be a non-reaction for me if someone doesn't remember it or has a very neutral opinion. Like, I would much prefer someone to have a really negative reaction to something than to not really engage with it at all. So, you know, my hope is that people do enjoy the experience of the piece, but that it is just that. It is an experience that, you know, I'm trying to do as a public service, where in this case we're proposing questions about the river and our relationship to it and our knowledge about it from many different experiential perspectives. So I guess my hope is that people will come away from my piece having A, enjoyed the experience, and B, been made to think a little bit deeper about the both music itself and also the subject of the music.
All right. Let's turn to Royd and see, just to maybe, you know, it's a minute to each for our last two guests here. I've talked to conductors before, back to the audience, right? And they tell me, back to the audience, you can tell the mood of the crowd. Talk a little bit about that interaction that Maya was talking about. It's, you know, you compose this, but then it becomes a living thing. It's interactive.
Well, for sure. It definitely takes on a different form when it's in front of people. You know, I've heard it in rehearsal now, I've heard it on my computer, but it really becomes a different experience when someone else interacts with it and gives their energy to that performance, and the musicians feel it too. They feel the energy from the people, and they can kind of respond by tweaking it, making it going faster or something like that. But I think just like what Maya said, it's a subjective experience. I hope you will engage with it. What I have written here is one version of one perspective of this vast subject. And so people can take it or leave it, but I hope they will enjoy the experience.
Yeah. Connor Chi, I want to talk a little about heritage and specifically your parents. That's that image is sticking in my mind. Your mom and dad driving you 2 hours to Flagstaff, right?
Yes.
You probably want to repay that, right?
Oh, certainly.
Tell me about that. How that influences your composing, your performing.
I recognize how fortunate I was to have that opportunity, and I know that there are many who don't have that opportunity. So my way of giving back is really sort of showing the importance of that and hopefully creating more opportunities. And I think it kind of goes back to the root of the many purposes of music, which is communication, and it has a way of reaching into people's souls. So just an event like this is so important, where we get to hear from experts like John and Howard and hear the composers talk about the underpinnings of their music, but also have that music sort of connect with the audience and raise important questions and start important discussions about the world around us.
We'll leave it there. We're out at the end of our hour. It's gone by fast. We could do another hour, I'm sure, but appreciate our guests coming in today. We're broadcasting from the USU Moab Center in Moab. We're focusing this hour on the Moab Music Festival. You can find them at moabmusicfest.org. So many performances, so many venues. It's just a tremendous event that goes through September 14th. And we've been highlighting a concert that's going to happen tomorrow evening, featuring world premieres by composers. We've had our composers in with us here. Maya Miro Johnson, thank you so much for joining us. Also been joined by Royden C, thank you, and Connor Chi, thank you so much. We've also been joined by Howard Dennis. Howard's a religious leader, a flute chief, a clan leader in Hopi Village. Howard, thanks for coming, I appreciate it so much. And John Weisheit has been with us. He's co-founder at Living Rivers, Colorado River Keeper. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks, everyone, at the Moab Music Festival for their help with this at the USU Moab campus. Great folks here. And Red Rock Bakery in Moab. Shout out to my producers at UPR. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and have a great Labor Day weekend.